We arrive today at the last of the seven great feasts of the church year. The new church year is just around the corner with the first Sunday of Advent. And then the big feast of the church comes, the first one, with Christmas. And the second is just 12 days after with Epiphany. And then we have to wait until Easter, and then 40 days later, the Ascension, and then 10 days after that, Pentecost, and then a week after that, we get our very own pastoral feast, Trinity Sunday. And then, after what seems like an eternity, we finally get to the last of the seven, All Saints' Day. We start with the baby in the manger, and we end with the hosts of heaven. I think there is a kind of beauty in that arc. Brothers and sisters, at the risk of revealing more about myself than I would like you to know, All Saints is my favorite feast of the whole church year. That might have something to do with the fact that I grew up in an All Saints church, so I remember this day as a day of particular joy. And it may also have something to do with being ordained. Now, the dean and the canon are more pious than I am. And so they probably don't have the same struggles that I do with the other feasts of the church year. But it is so hard to disentangle Christmas from the culture. By the time Epiphany comes, all of you are so burned out from the joys of Christmas to really pay much attention. And you miss out on one of the really great parties the church has to offer. Easter should be the favorite feast of the whole year for anyone who is ordained, because it is the feast built on the highest claim of the whole Christian faith. But for some of us who are ordained, Easter Day is the finish line of a marathon of 8 days of planning and rehearsing and worrying and calling up people to remind them they said they would read until we finally get there. So for me, it's All Saints Day. It's almost as though it's the one major feast we have that sneaks up on you unawares. When you just think you're coming to church in early November. There aren't All Saints displays in the Galerie Lafayette. The culture has not taken it away from us. And the calendars of work and school still make it so we can all be here. And here's the best part of the whole deal for me. All Saints is the day we remember the unbreakable link between the church militant and the church triumphant. Old language that we still have not improved on. Between ourselves, still trying to live by faith, and those we remember and pray for who set an example for us about what Christian community, what beloved community is supposed to be all about. So it might seem strange on this happy feast day, my favorite day, to confront you with questions. But if the point of Christmas is the baby in the manger, and the point of Easter is the claim that through the cross and resurrection, the whole world for all time has been changed, then the point of All Saints is to ask you two questions. The first question is, why are you here? I don't mean by asking that to demand of you a statement of belief or a testimony to your faith. We are not a church that does Wednesday evening testimonies. I grew up in the Midwest. That was a standard practice for the churches in my neighborhood, not at the cathedral. I mean by this question to take you back to the very beginning of your experience of faith in God. How did that happen? What is the beginning of the story that ends with you sitting in that pew today? My guess is that very near the beginning of that story, there is a person. one other person of faith. It might have been your parents. It might have been a family member. It might have been a person who shaped your early life in a really significant way. But somewhere, somehow, my guess is that your answer to this question, why are you here, comes down to not an idea, not a doctrine, not a beautiful building, but a person. A person. Think about that for a minute. Who was that person? My grandparents came to America from England about exactly 100 years ago. And in the living room of their house, I remember this little place known as the God's Corner. It was a small place in the corner of a room, a little shelf with keepsakes and photographs of family members that they kept in prayer during World War II. The four of my five uncles, who were off serving in the war, had their photographs there. The fifth uncle had polio and he couldn't serve. And when my Uncle John's plane crashed in the Pacific and his blue star turned to gold, my grandmother simply put a small cutting from the evergreen tree in front of his picture in the God's Corner. My grandparents were people of quiet, steady faith. There was nothing even remotely evangelical about them. But they lived easily and moved gracefully in a kind of borderland between this material world and the world of God's divine, intentional, loving possibility. It was as real to them as the wooden dining room table around which we gathered every Sunday. They had no illusions that God needed a reminder from them about their boys in the war or their loved ones back in England. It was more that by engaging in simple acts of devotion, they were joining in the work that God was already doing and continuing to be connected through the Spirit to those they loved and were apart from. What I remember about them is not what they said about Christianity, or the Nicene Creed, or the doctrine of the Incarnation. I remember that they listened to me, that they heard what I was wondering about and exploring and the questions that I was filled with, and they made me feel by listening to me that I was beloved. And because they listened to me, because they gave me that sense of having all my questions and all my wonderings welcomed and affirmed, I was able to connect up their treasuring what I shared with them with this life they shared so easily and effortlessly with God. If you look in the first few pages of the prayer book, you'll find the calendar of the church year and the seven great feasts I mentioned on page 15. And then the listing of all the saints' days month by month that follows. Saints have always had a kind of vexed place in the Anglican church. When we struck out on our own as a church, the veneration of saints was pretty strongly oppressed and discouraged as a remnant of Romanism. But the faithful people in the pews felt deeply bound to the possibility of holy people. And no less a figure than John Donne somewhat daringly wrote a poem longing for the chance to give thanks for angels and saints. And eventually, a shortened list of Anglican-approved saints made it back into the rotation. Even so, for the most part, those folks in the front of the prayer book, those are stained glass saints. They're the great heroes of the faith, yes, the ones the churches are named for and the statues are made of, But none of them have ever made any of us feel especially beloved. None of them have heard our stories as we told them, or given us a sense of feeling beheld and welcomed. All Saints, narrowly, is just a celebration of those people who made the list. But it seems to me if we expand our vision and include in the compass of this day all of those people who are the reasons why we are here today, the examples of faith, the people who listened, the ones who showed us how our story was connected to the story of God's loving presence and purpose, and the people who gave us a sense of connection to a world that is not limited by the measures of the measurable. Well, then we remember and give thanks for the people who were at the beginning of the story that has us here today still seeking, still searching, and still sensing the holiness of God. So here's the second question. Have you been that beginning for someone else? Let me tell you a secret. You may never know the answer to that question. You may already be and don't know it. One thing is certain. To be that sort of person does not mean to be out on the street corners evangelizing passersby and getting them to come into the American cathedral. I'm not even sure that's legal in France. No. What it means is to be a person who invites other people simply to tell you their story and then to listen, to hold gently what they offer you in return. A person who gives others a sense of the possibility that they are beloved. Because when we do that, we introduce people to how God feels about them. And we invite one more person into the community of the beloved that the whole church is supposed to be. If we really did that, if we did that intentionally, All Saints' Day would end up being the most subversive, the most dangerous of all the feasts in the Christian calendar. Because unlike all of our founding stories and the abstract ideas that form the basis of the feasts on other days, All Saints basically argues that people just like you and me can be the means by which other people find access to the possibility of God. That God is right here with us. That the sacred is still possible right in our midst. Who knows what those Ephesians said to Paul? Who knows what stories they shared with him? All we know is that Paul listened to them. I have heard of your faith in Jesus and your love toward all the saints. And of course, what Paul meant by that was love toward all the people in the church, because of course there was no calendar in the front of the prayer book then to tell you who the approved saints were. And then Paul repeats back to them what he has heard them say. And what he really does is hold up for them the idea that he loves them, which makes it easier for them to connect to the idea that God might love them too. Sisters and brothers, we proclaim the outrageous idea that the world is still the place where the holy work of God gets done. And that we meet up with that work, we become a part of it, because of people just like us. The saints among us are those agents of grace, helping us to believe that we too are beloved. Go forth, saints. You have work to do. Amen.